I'm Jen White. This is 1A. Since the start of the pandemic, many of us have been looking for an escape. TV and film can get you there, but for many of you, video games went a step beyond.
2020 has been a crazy year for everyone, but video games have made such an impact in my life. This past year, I've gotten married online. I play a lot of PlayStation, Xbox, Steam, Nintendo, you name it. And it's brought such a sense of community to everyone that I've known.
Been playing a lot of games to get over the pandemic, but probably the main one is Super Smash Bros. Have a lot of friends around North Carolina, and obviously we can't get together, but Smash is a good way to get everybody together.
I think Among Us deserves a top spot in the rankings of great pandemic games of 2020. We play the game with voice chat on Discord, so our games are full of trash talk and verbal deceit. We made it a weekly thing, and it's a lot of fun.
Oculus Quest with VR has been a great thing during this pandemic. I've been able to join groups of people and actually conversate with them. I've talked to people from London, from Canada, even from Australia. It's a great way to connect with people without actually having to get out of the house.
That was Tabitha, Jimmy, Ashley, and Jackson. Thanks for those messages. This month, our hit list will look at some of the year's best pop culture offerings, and we're kicking it off with a look at 2020's best games. Here to help us out is Matt Kim. He's a reporter at IGN. Hey, Matt, welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Also with us, Ash Parrish, a staff writer at Kotaku. Ash, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also with us, Charlie Hall, a senior reporter for Polygon. Charlie, welcome to 1A.
Very nice to be with you, Jen.
We also want to hear from you about your favorite video games released this year. You can comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or send us an email at 1A@WAMU.org. Okay, Charlie, let's start by talking about what 2020 meant for gaming. Video games were already hugely popular, but what happened in demand this year?
What happened to demand is that everybody suddenly wanted the latest video game consoles that were out there. You know, the Nintendo Switch, which has been on sale for a couple of years now, was suddenly in very short supply, as were accessories that folks needed to expand or, you know, replace items that had been damaged. But also out came the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X and S, which were hugely supply constrained. And there were virtual queues, there were physical queues. People just still today can't get these devices that they want.
We heard from a couple of you who just started playing video games this year. The first person you'll hear is Peter from Los Angeles.
This year during the pandemic, I've never been a big video game person, but my brother said that I should get Call of Duty Modern Warfare. And it became a way for he and I to check in every day, talk to each other. We ended up getting friends that we grew up with involved. Eventually, even my wife started playing with us. And even though it's a violent, kind of silly game, it became a nice way for us to stay connected and talk and bond and just feel close to each other, even though we were all separated all over the country.
Hi, my name is Curtis. I'm in Yakima, Washington. Ever since the pandemic, I found myself playing online multiplayer games with my college buddies, because I can't see them in person. And so I'm actually really thankful for this gaming system that I never really thought was for me or really good for me.
Ash, what's your read on why so many people are flocking to video games?
I mean, as a lot of the callers have already stated, video games have become this kind of socialization by proxy. We can't go out and see our friends. We can't hang out anymore like we used to and have a movie night. But video games offer this platform for us to connect still in meaningful ways. You can hop on a voice chat and you can talk to people. You can experience this activity together. So, you know, you're not just, you know, picking up a call or getting on FaceTime, you're actually doing something. And I think it's that the community, that collective, that communal coming together and doing things together that video games has always had, is that people are discovering that for the first time and they realize, oh yeah, this is something that I can do and enjoy and engage with these people.
I'm really,
while, you know, staying at home.
I'm really curious to hear what video games have meant to each of you this year, given the huge stresses of the pandemic. Matt, I'll come to you first.
I think as everyone has stated already, video games has been this wonderful sort of socialization escape during these times. You know, myself, pandemic in the lockdown in San Francisco started right around my birthday, which was unfortunate. But luckily for me, Animal Crossing New Horizons came out just a couple weeks later, and I even had a virtual party there.
Huh. What about for you, Ash?
Yeah, Animal Crossing is definitely one of those games where I can get in touch with friends that I haven't seen for a while, and we can give each other gifts in the form of bells or new recipes that we want to make for our homes and things like that. And it's also become like this kind of like quiet place to escape to, away from the news cycle and all of the horrible things that are coming out of it, where it's where the weather's fun every day. I get to plant my garden. It's become a source of peace. And that's really what gaming has done for me this year.
Charlie, what about for you?
For me, gaming has been, you know, it's been a place to travel. One of my favorite experiences this year has been Microsoft Flight Simulator, which has done an incredible job at recreating literally the entire planet using data from Bing Maps. And I can go, I travel a lot for my job and personally, but I wasn't able to this year, but I was able to fly and go visit the Great Pyramids of Giza or dive into the Grand Canyon and kind of take it from a hobby aspect as well. Am I getting to be a better pilot, virtually at least?
Well, let's turn to some of the games that got a lot of attention this year. Matt, what is Last of Us Part 2? What is it about? Matt, are you still with us?
Hello, sorry. Yeah, there was a weird disconnect on my end.
No worries. But tell us about Last of Us Part 2.
So The Last of Us Part 2 is probably one of the bigger game releases of the year. It's a AAA game, which is a blockbuster equivalent if we're thinking about movies. And it's a sequel to developer Naughty Dog's marquee title, The Last of Us, set in a post-apocalyptic, zombie-infested world. And it is also one of the most critically acclaimed titles of the year. If gamers are interested in something that's sort of the peak of what game development has to offer in terms of graphics, acting, writing, design, gameplay.
Jason writes on Facebook, I deeply loved The Last of Us Part 2. I don't care what anyone says. It's a fantastic game, and I really enjoyed playing through its narrative. Doom Eternal was also excellent, but The Last of Us 2 was near perfect to me. Matt, I wonder, okay, post-apocalyptic world, zombie apocalypse. This doesn't sound like a particularly uplifting game, but why do you think it attracted so many people?
Absolutely no. It's a grim and dark game, similar to Cormac McCarthy's The Road is a common comparison. And I think it's popular in the way that many zombie-themed shows are popular, in that there is a sort of fascination about survival, about human survival in these kind of scenarios. You know, how would you respond? How would you react if you were suddenly put in the situation? And something that makes games like The Last of Us more immersive than TV or movies is that you actually can play through them. You know, you can react in real time via digital to see how you would hold up, so to speak.
Well, we asked each of you to make a list of your five favorite games from this year. I want to hear those lists, and then we can zoom in and talk a little bit more about a few of the games. And just a quick note, we will share these lists on our homepage, the1a.org, and we'll also tweet them out at 1A. Ash, I'm going to come to you first. Give us your top five.
Okay, my top five games of the year are Paper Mario, The Origami King, World of Warcraft Shadowlands. I think this one is going to be on everybody's list, or at least it should be, Hades. Also, I have Persona 5 Royal and Animal Crossing.
Matt, what's on your list?
Yeah, similar to Ash, I also have Hades, so that's one. But I also have The Last of Us 2, Part 2, Animal Crossing New Horizons, Ghost of Tsushima, and Cyberpunk 2077.
All right, Charlie, your list?
I already talked about Microsoft Flight Simulator. I also fell madly in love with Star Wars Squadrons this year. Crusader Kings 3 is incredibly unique. Animal Crossing's New Horizon, my whole family loved. And the VR title Half-Life Alyx.
All right, let's talk about Cyberpunk 2077. This is one of the most highly anticipated games of the year. It was released last week, and here's a trailer for the game, which features actor Keanu Reeves as one of the main characters.
In 2077, what makes someone a criminal? Getting caught. In Night City, you can become anyone, anything, if your body can pay the price. So seize the day, then set it on fire.
One of you tweeted, Cyberpunk 2077 is my favorite game of the year. I know it's buggy, but I like the concept. When it's not glitching out, the gameplay is fun. Matt, for those of us who are maybe not so up on the gaming landscape, what exactly is Cyberpunk 2077? And as a note to our audience, this is probably not a game to buy your kid.
Yeah, Cyberpunk 2077 is, as it says on the title, is a role-playing game set in a cyberpunk universe, you know, the sci-fi literary genre. And it is actually, you know, I would describe it as a crime story. You know, the player creates their own character, and they are a mercenary in this hyper-futuristic dystopic city called Night City, and they go around and they help out the underworld elements doing odd jobs. And the bulk of the story takes place after, you know, when the traditional job goes bad, right? After a bad heist. And the player must now race against the clock to sort of deal with the consequences of and the fallout of what happened.
And why do you love it so much?
I think Cyberpunk is actually a fascinating game, and I think because of how recently it came out, there's going to be weeks of discussion and diving into it. But for me in particular, I found that Cyberpunk really shines with its city. You know, the developers CD Projekt Red have always talked about Night City as its own character, and I think depending on how you feel about the game overall, Night City itself, I found, was a successful sort of design, implementation. One thing that sets it apart from other games is how vertical it is. A lot of open world games sort of create these wide expanses of flat land that's horizontal, but Night City feels condensed, and if you look up, you know, the sun gets blocked out because of how tall the buildings are.
I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A. We're talking to Matt Kim, a reporter at IGN, Ash Parrish, a staff writer at Kotaku, and Charlie Hall, senior reporter for Polygon. Charlie, as Matt alluded to, Cyberpunk was delayed a few different times before finally being released last week. What can you tell us about how eager people were to get their hands on it and why?
Folks were absolutely rabid to get their hands on this game, and the main reason is because of the pedigree of CD Projekt Red, the studio behind it. They came out with the Witcher series of video games, which, you know, it's like the Lord of the Rings, but Polish, and it was translated into this video game format and became a remarkably popular series, a rich role-playing experience. Even before it became a Henry Cavill vehicle on Netflix, a wildly popular television series. But also the marketing was just a years-long fest for the eyes. With what they were showing off and the stars like Keanu Reeves that they had attached really caught the attention of the entire industry.
But it did drop with some glitches and bugs, right?
It did. Unfortunately, it sounds like, and it's really a developing story right now, it sounds like CD Projekt wanted to sell as many copies as they possibly could, and that meant getting it onto the last generation of consoles, the PlayStation 4 and the older Xbox devices. There were compromises that had to be made, and it is, some say, almost unplayable on the PlayStation 4 and a challenge on the older Xbox device. PC running great, the new PlayStation, the new Xboxes, all working adequately, but these legacy devices are not going so well. And of course, that's after months and months of pushing their staff with this horrible crunch that they had to do.
But at the same time, the game has already recouped its cost on pre-orders alone. How do video games make money? And how is it different from, say, a movie release?
Gosh, how do video games make money? It is very different from movies. There is this tradition of pre-ordering, like you said. You can go to individual retailers. You can go to the developer's website, to portals like Steam, the Epic Games Store, and you can put down your money sometimes years in advance for this game. It's not something that I've done, though, for years now because of issues like we're experiencing now where certain platforms are not getting the best performance or even adequate performance, CD Projekt has come out in the last couple of days and offered refunds. And this is against the policy of platforms like PlayStation, who do not give refunds.
Ash, a review from Game Informer warned players that the game could trigger epileptic seizures due to some images and sequences in Cyberpunk. What was the response from the game developer, and what does it say about the animations?
So, I guess this was some kind of oversight on CD Projekt Red, the developer of Cyberpunk 2077, where they included these bright flashing images that are part of a mandatory sequence of the game that triggered a grand mal seizure. And what we've seen, what we typically see, is before you boot up every game, they always put this 10-pole risk of seizure, and that didn't happen with Cyberpunk. So what they did is they went back, they worked with the journalist who had the seizure to retool the sequences such that they don't, or maybe less intense, won't trigger a seizure anymore. And they have included that warning now so players can be better equipped to make decisions about what they want to do when it's time to play.
When you look at Cyberpunk 2077, Matt, what does it say to you about the direction of the video game industry? Are we turning them more into cinematic experiences?
I think that's been a trend at the highest level of the game development industry for a long time, not just with Cyberpunk. Better graphics, better visuals, better acting has always been a goal of AAA developers, but I don't think that's necessarily the case of the entire industry. You know, indie developers, mid-sized developers, they compensate by not being able to achieve these sort of high-level graphics with a creativity in art style and design that I think is really refreshing and really shows the wide range of game development.
We're talking about our favorite video games of 2020 with Matt Kim, a reporter at IGN, Ash Parrish, a staff writer at Kotaku, and Charlie Hall, senior reporter for Polygon. We heard from Kristen on Facebook, who says, I got a Nintendo Switch this summer for my 57th birthday. My Animal Crossing island has sections reminiscent of all chapters of my life. There's a rest area hearkening to my many road trips as a child. Two outdoor cafes symbolize my several trips to Europe. My house itself has rooms resembling those I grew up in, both in my own home, but also my grandmother's farm and my aunt's beloved house. During the pandemic, there's an uncanny comfort in touching up these areas. It's my creative outlet. It's my visual representation of memories. And Kristen, it sounds like a pretty sweet setup you've got there. I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment. This is 1A. Today, we're all about the best video games of the year. Tomorrow, we'll be talking country. For the first time in the history of the Grammys, this year's Best Country Album category is entirely female. We're looking forward to hearing from one of the nominees, singer-songwriter Ingrid Andress. She's also in the running for Best New Artist. Perhaps you're already a fan, or you just love country music. We'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have for Ingrid? How do you feel about this year's Grammy nominations? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. You can also get in touch using our app, 1A Vox Pop, and we'll share some of your stories tomorrow on 1A. Now let's get back to talking about some of the best video games of the year with Matt Kim, a reporter at IGN, Ash Parrish, a staff writer at Kotaku, and Charlie Hall, senior reporter for Polygon. So we have got to talk about a completely different game experience that helped define 2020. Of course, Animal Crossing New Horizons. It was released at the most perfect time, just days after we started to get stay-at-home orders in March. And it helped a lot of people out during a very tough time, including a lot of you.
This year, we've been playing Animal Crossing New Horizons, which is a game where you get to essentially manage your own little island paradise. It's been nice to get away from everything that's been going on in the world and just focus on something happy.
The video game that I learned to play and has saved my sanity during this crazy year is Animal Crossing. I have been the type of person who didn't play video games before, but my kids and I have just had a blast learning how to play this game. They have taught me a lot. They do know the video gaming world in a way that I don't. So I got to learn kind of a different part of their lives, and they got to teach their mom something new.
Alice also tweets, Animal Crossing is the best game ever. I can escape to a tropical island, which is now covered in snow, but I can snorkel without getting cold. Best part, visiting the islands of family and friends, then playing together. Charlie, talk about Animal Crossing and what people experience when they play it.
Animal Crossing is this delightful world filled with happy, nearly mute characters that just run around spreading joy. It's very consumer focused. It almost becomes appointment gaming. You want to show up every day to find out what new items, what new experiences are on offer. And then you get to make this tiny little digital dollhouse, this world in miniature that you get to control and then terraform that land. And there's also ways to share that experience with other people. I think up to 8 people can get together on one island at one time. And for my family, it was an opportunity for us to get together, all 4 of us, but also to have play dates for the kids and hang out with our adult friends as well. It's really remarkable.
And we should say the game is extremely child-friendly for people who may be looking for a gaming experience for their young one. We got this tweet from Evan who says, Animal Crossing New Horizons delivered an amount of escapism in the first month it dropped that I think will take us several years to fully understand and unpack. Matt, what did the game do for you during a really stressful time?
As I mentioned before, the quarantine and stay at home orders began the week of my birthday in March in San Francisco. And funny enough, Animal Crossing came out towards the end of the month, just a couple weeks afterwards. And as Charlie says, you can hang out with friends online and you can build your own little island paradise and you can gather digitally. And that's exactly what I did. The tools in Animal Crossing make it so that you actually can hold, virtual events and parties. There are balloons that you can make and picnic tables you can set up. And so it's very easy to create the sort of festive environment from within the game.
Ash, what about for you? What do you love so much about Animal Crossing?
Everything. To put it lightly, I'm thinking about when the show came in and hearing the music and the wave of calm that washed over me, hearing that little trumpet diddle and how it reminded me of all the peacefulness that I was able to experience in that game. For me, and I know probably for a lot of people, it becomes like this millennial paradise where we can, own a home with neighbors who like us, which is not something that a lot of us will get to experience with how home prices are. But, you get to do all these things that you would have loved to do in your real life, but can't. And that's not just owning a home, but like gardening. I have a garden with, tons of different flowers. I can go walk to the store and buy these pieces of clothing that I can wear and customize my look that I've made myself. It's such an avenue for personal expression, having all the rooms in your home and being able to turn one into this Japanese style bathhouse, and another is like this, a room made of clouds with unicorn dust everywhere. It's so peaceful and so much, very much an escape, like everyone has said. And I know people that have used Animal Crossing as a proxy for, having dates or, having graduation parties, weddings, because you can't do it in the real world. So Animal Crossing just about has all the tools you need to do these real life events digitally and safely. So why not? And that's kind of what it's become.
Is it also the simplicity of the game that maybe it's a pretty easy entry point for people who haven't done gaming before?
Absolutely. You heard a lot of people talk about how they were not big gamers, but they were able to get into Animal Crossing. And I think that speaks to how easy it is to get sucked in. The game explains to you what it is that you have to do and how to do it. And then it's very simple and it lets you go from there. And you can choose as much or as little that you want to engage with it. And with no, you don't suffer penalties. There's no health bar. You do kind of have to avoid, getting bit by scorpions or or bees. But other than that, there's no, you don't get no scary or tense moments for like little kids that you might have to warn them from. It's just you know, here's your beautiful island. Go have fun with it.
Well, Mrs. J tweets, it took us forever to find a Switch for our oldest daughter to be able to play Animal Crossing. Our girls have been doing a lot of Minecraft with school friends and their cousins who live in a different state. Among Us has been big, too. And Josh tweets, 1A is totally snubbing Among Us when talking about the best video games of the year. Charlie, we don't want to snub Among Us. Tell us about this game and how it's performed this year.
You know, Among Us takes this concept of a hidden role game. You might think of the kind of the folk game Werewolf, where there is a killer among us, and it takes it into this modern world of performative video gaming. Platforms like Twitch, the personalities on Twitch cannot get enough of Among Us. You run around in your little spacesuit, your little bean-shaped character, and you try not to die. That's the game, and it's all the fun happens in the communication between the players through voice chat, through clients like Discord that I think one of your listeners mentioned earlier in the program.
Well, lots of gaming publications have said Hades is the best game of the year. Ash, explain this game to us.
Hades is a game where you play as the prince of hell who decides he doesn't want to stay in hell anymore, so he has to escape. But with the way hell it works, it's this labyrinthine structure that constantly shifts and moves, and it's filled with monsters who are trying to kill you to send you back home. So what you have to do is you take your weapon and you power up your stats in different ways, and you try to escape hell. And when you die, and you will die a lot, you are sent back to the beginning to start all over again. And it's this simplistic game that a lot of people might not, it doesn't sound very interesting, especially if you're one of those people who doesn't like repetition a lot. But the way that Supergiant, the developer for Hades, has crafted a beautiful story with beautiful art, it definitely sucks in the player and it makes them want to die over and over again so they can experience more of the story.
Tell us a little bit more about the story, because I'm thinking of a game where you die over and over again, which is usually what you're trying to avoid. What is it about the complexity of the story that attracts you?
It starts very simplistically. You're just a guy who wants to get out of hell. He's the prince, and he does not like his father, who is the ruler of the underworld, and he decides he wants to get out. And he escapes. You don't interact. The first time you're dropped in, you get a boon from your relatives on Mount Olympus, because this is very like Greek mythology based game. And as you go forward, they talk to you, these gods. Like Athena will show up and is like, hey, you're trying to escape, here, let me help you. And then you run into Athena, who tells you the same. And as you do that over and over and over again, the dialogue changes and more of the story is revealed, such that, oh, it's not only that Prince Agrius wants to escape hell, he wants to get to our world, the living world, so he can find someone who's been lost to him. So and it's just cataloging this over and over again, his need, his desperation to answer these questions about himself and his history.
Matt, Hades is also one of your favorite games this year. What did you like so much about it?
Yeah, I think Hades sort of exemplifies the sort of other end of the spectrum compared to The Last of Us 2. You know, there's no photorealistic graphics, but instead there's a hyper-stylized art style that's completely unique to Supergiant. You know, every element of that game, from its visuals to its writing, feels handcrafted, for a popular term, to describe indie games. You know, and I what I loved actually was how truthful it was to Greek mythology, but in its own modern way. You know, like Greek gods are notoriously petty, and that's a gameplay mechanic that you actually encounter in Hades. You know, these gods will fight one another to get your attention, because that's just who they are, and that's in their nature. And Supergiant found a way to turn that into a video game mechanic.
I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A. We're talking to Matt Kim, a reporter at IGN, Ash Parrish, a staff writer at Kotaku, and Charlie Hall, senior reporter at Polygon. We also heard from one of you who wanted to share your love for The Last of Us 2.
Hi, my name is Selena, and I live in Los Angeles, California. I really love video games, but one of my favorite video game series has got to be The Last of Us series, and The Last of Us Part 2 came out in June of this year. I was so excited to play it, and I think it's one of the best stories I've ever experienced, both in movies, television, or books. And I think one of the coolest things about this story is the complicity of it. The story does not move forward unless you participate in these sometimes horrendous acts that are happening on screen. It's not the happiest story in the world, but it's thoroughly enjoyable, an incredible story, and very well done.
Now, MJ had a slightly different take. MJ tweets, The Last of Us Part 2 was so disappointing. It seemed so painfully out of touch to relish in the excess death and violence in a year when real people are dying at such a high rate. It was a misery simulator, as the Kotaku review described it. Matt, this was one of your favorite games this year. What did you think?
Those are both incredibly valid points, and to an extent, I agree. It is a dark game. It is a game that forces the player's hand in committing these sort of awful acts. I compared it personally to revenge films from South Korea as a Korean American, and that's sort of something that I grew up loving, and. I think The Last of Us Part II does a good job in showing the corrosion of revenge on the soul, so to speak, you know, in the same way that South Korean films like Old Boy does. And in the way that it goes the extra step of making you participate in it sort of makes that echo back into you.
Well, we got this tweet from Dalton who says, One of the best experiences I've had in a game in a long time was my time with Ghost of Tsushima earlier this year. It feels like a classic Kurosawa samurai film that you yourself get to control and make your own. It mixes thrilling action with artistic finesse beautifully. Matt, tell us about the plot of Ghost of Tsushima.
So Ghost of Tsushima is very much like a classic samurai film. You know, you are a son of a local lord on the island of Tsushima during the Mongol invasion, a fictional Mongol invasion, actually. And the goal of the game is the Mongols have taken over the island. They've captured your uncle, and you are left with nothing. No allies, no friends, no armor, no weapons. And you basically have to go back and fight the Khan in order to rescue your uncle, free your people, and save your land.
How does the game play? What do you like about it?
I think it's a very classic feeling kind of game. Well, a classic in the 2007 era, I suppose. A very traditional action adventure game. It mixes stealth gameplay, so you can quietly move up to enemies and take them out without anyone else knowing, or you can just challenge them outright into like sword fights with your katanas. You know, just straight up, hey, I'm here. Let's fight. Let's duel out in the open. Depending on your preference.
How did you feel about the game's representation of Asian characters? This is something the gaming industry has struggled with in the past.
I've actually spoken about this online and in publications like Washington Post. I did have problems with the representation of Asian characters. I feel like it relies heavily on those Asian tropes, so to speak, of Asian characters, you know, feeling that honor is most important above all. And beyond that, you know, because it's a fictional historical event, there were some uncomfortable parallels regarding, you know, the proud local natives fending off foreign hordes of invaders. And I felt that the gameplay can be divorced from it. But if I had to base it completely on the story, I do have serious issues with it.
Well, we've got just about a minute left, and we've been talking about the best of 2020, but I want to hear what upcoming releases you're really looking forward to. Charlie, quickly?
Oh, my gosh. Upcoming releases. Pass the hat. I got to think on that.
Ash, what about you?
Yeah, big same. Everybody wanted Cyberpunk, and it's here. I guess I would say I want a working Cyberpunk 2077, something that does work on those consoles. I want to see what, you know, with Cyberpunk has more time to actually really polish this game. I want to see what that game is.
Matt, what about for you?
Possibly due to the fact that it's coming out in a month, probably Hitman 3 is my most anticipated immediately.
Okay, Charlie, you've had a smooth 20 seconds to come up with what you're looking forward to in 2021.
I'm looking forward to the continued support of Microsoft Flight Simulator, which was my game of the year. I want to go and see new and exciting and beautiful places out in the world. And it's a platform. It's not just a game. And I want to do more of it in 2021.
That's Charlie Hall, senior reporter for Polygon. We also had Ash Parrish, a staff writer at Kotaku, and Matt Kim, a reporter at IGN. Thanks to you all. And don't forget, we shared their top 5 list at the1a.org. We always also tweeted it out at the1a. Remember, we have a text club. We'll only ever send you one text a day. It's the fastest way to connect with us. Details about how to sign up can be found in the Ask 1A tab at the1a.org. Today's producers were Katie Klein, Hector Alejandro Arzade, and Emmanuel Johnson. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening. Game on. Let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.